Hey, Brett, I noticed you brought some popcorn. What's the deal?
Well, we're going to be talking about movies, so I thought I'd bring a nice big bowl of popcorn.
Well, is it freshly popped?
It is so freshly popped.
So, Jim and Patrick are out of town. I'm Mike Snyder.
Then I'm Brett Motif.
And we're going to sit in and give them a break. And hopefully you enjoyed our episode about some girls in the Rolling Stones. And, you know, we're here. We just cracked a couple beers.
Got some
popcorn.
And
we have some popcorn. And we thought we wanted to do another episode.
Absolutely.
To give those guys another day off.
Well, once they give us the equipment, they're out of town. It's hard getting it back.
Yeah, so it's okay. I mean, it's good with you that we have another one, right?
Absolutely. I mean, wherever they are, I'll send them some money. I love when they're out of town so we can take over. So I thought we could do like maybe 12 episodes in a row.
So like kind of like the Beatles anthology.
The Mike know? And Brett anthology.
Yeah, anthology of our... All right, well, okay. Well, we're not going to persecute you all with that. But we did talk a little bit and thought, obviously, people are listening to this, love music.
Yeah, right.
And I love movies too, and I know you do too. And we thought, well, why don't we... do something about that.
Let's merge those together. You know, movies, music and movies. So that's how we came up with this idea. We thought we'd get together and talk a little about some of our favorite songs from our favorite movies. Not necessarily musicals, but movies that had a strong soundtrack, that had music that really was inserted and had an effect on the whole story, and that really made an impact on you. And when you merge music and movies together, we know it's magic, don't we?
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of ways that, I mean, music helps movies in many different ways. I mean, great scores.
Helps tell the story.
You know, I mean, like John Williams has helped, helps Star Wars and Jaws. But we're not talking about that. That's
no,
all great.
That's
somebody
all
smarter than us can talk about composing.
Much smarter than
but
us.
But and there's been rock movies where people sing original stuff in there. Or they sing like, you know, Backbeat where they did the history of the Beatles. We're
sure.
not talking about that. We're talking about where music that's been previously released by artists that you know
right.
are brought into a new work, a movie,
right. uh-huh.
and used, and they elevate that scene or that movie to another level.
Absolutely.
So, you know, why don't you start us off, Brett? I mean, what comes to mind when I brought this idea up
yep.
and you said, yeah, let's do it? Obviously, there was something in your mind.
Absolutely. You know, when you first brought it up, I'm thinking, you know, what are the movies that the music really made an impact on me? And I initially, because you and I both were young in the 80s, I thought of all those John Hughes movies. Remember all those? Like 16
yep,
candles.
Yep, took a lot of girls to those movies. Yep, spent a lot of money.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was cheaper then, but yes.
We exactly.
did. Like, you know, 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club.
Yep.
And as you move on, like, you know, later movies like Santa Claus Fire and all those kind of movies, they had big scores in them, right? They had
exactly.
really big... song. They were full of songs, especially all the John Hughes movies. Must have been 24 of those. But I remember the movie that I saw in the theater in the late 80s that made a huge impact on me was Back to the Future. I mean,
an
all-time classic Spielberg movie, massive movie, big soundtrack. And I'll never forget sitting in a theater, and if you remember the first scene where Marty McFly is going to Doc's laboratory, right? And Doc's not there, and he plugs in his guitar and cranks it up, hits a big
yep.
chord. He gets blown back. The phone rings. It's Doc, who tells him that it's actually later than he thinks it is. It's like 8:25, not 8. He says, Doc, I'm late for school. He hangs up the phone, and then we get Huey Lewis, The Power of Love comes on. Just boom, impact, right? And that's just an incredible scene in movie history, and I loved it. So that's probably my first pick. Is The Power of Love by Huey Lewis. I know you love this song, too.
Well, that's great. I mean, and what's interesting is back then, at least I try to put myself in my shoes of who I was back then. I didn't go there expecting to hear music. I went there, you know, because it was a Spielberg movie. It had Michael J. Fox. I mean, I knew it was going to be sci-fi. That was my thing.
Right.
And I knew it was going to be, you know, comedic. And then to have Huey Lewis, which is a band I enjoyed at the time, you know, Huey Lewis and the News, a band I enjoyed at the time and still enjoy now, rock out. That was great. I'm not sure, but that may have been the release of that song. In this case, we may be breaking our somewhat liberal rules that we had. I think it became a single, right? I don't know if it was on an album yet. We'll have to look that up.
It was a single in 85. And I think it went to number one. I'm going to fact check myself here. It gave the band their first number one hit.
I have a little Huey Lewis story to tell you. I went to University of Kansas in Lawrence, which is near Kansas City. I went to a lot of my first concerts in Kansas City. And, you know, evidently Huey Lewis was friends with George Brett, who was like, you know, he's a Hall of Fame baseball player, third baseman. And
great last name.
Yeah. And what was cool was Brett would get to get to play. George Brett, I should say. I got to be careful how I say my words now.
Yep.
George would come up and act like he's playing saxophone during a song on Encore during the Huey Lewis concert.
Really?
So I'm pretty certain it was like when they played "I Want a New Drug," where they have the horns going dun 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 dun. So you know, if you're in the crowd and you know what's going on, George Brett's there. So I got to go backstage afterwards.
No kidding.
And I have a ticket stub signed by Huey Lewis and George Brett.
I don't know if many people would have that.
Not many people probably. Well,
those two together.
Well, they are pretty nice guys.
Sure.
I mean, they both played golf. They probably signed some of golf terms. But I love that. I love the picture that brings up when you talk about that scene, because it's exciting. I'm ready to go back and watch it again because it just has such great energy and it flows perfectly.
Right. So why don't we listen to a little sample of that?
Let's
this
do
is
it.
From the first scene of Back to the Future. This is Huey Lewis, a little bit of The Power of Love.
Song obviously added power to that film.
It did. It was the first scene. You've got Spielberg. You've got Michael J. Fox, which were probably some of the biggest people in Hollywood at that time. And that just really made it. It's a light movie. It's a fun movie. And it's not cutting edge, you know, Oscars stuff. But it obviously was a cultural phenomenon. And when I think about music in a movie, that scene and that song really impacted me. So that takes you back in the Wayback Machine to 85.
Perfect. I mean, it makes me want to watch the film again. It makes me want
to
be,
let's see,
it was 85. I was I 23 then?
No way.
That's right. I was born in 62, 85, 23.
Oh, gosh. You're going to tell everybody that on the air?
I don't care. You know, okay. When you get
great.
Past 50,
yeah,
you don't care anymore.
It's all
okay.
Downhill.
So
okay.
Now you have another film about that same time that I think a lot of people will identify with, too.
A lot of people are going to know this guy. So 84, 85 seemed to be, when I started researching it, along with the John Hughes movies, along with the Spielberg movie, the music that was coming out at that time, there were a lot of, you know, I could reel off a list here later, but there was a lot of impactful music in movies at that time. So a little guy named Prince put out a movie and an album in 84 called Purple Rain. Have you ever heard of Purple Rain, Mike?
I have heard of it. I've listened to it. I've seen it. And I would say I probably danced in it somewhere in Las Vegas. But anyway.
Absolutely. So the biggest track, Purple Rain, the title track, is obviously a great song. But, you know, the biggest hit off that movie was a song named When Doves Cry. Let's listen to a little bit of that, why don't we?
I would love to.
Violets and
So that is a pretty good song. Probably one of my favorite Prince songs, and had to come off that album in that movie of the same name. I remember watching that movie. I remember all the songs throughout it. It was massive, right? Yeah. Absolutely massive. The movie and the album.
Yeah, I don't remember how the movie did. I could look up box office. I should have looked up Box Office Mojo. But the album was number one for like a third of the year. And that song, When Doves Cry, yep, was number one for like 2 months or what?
I think it was a little over 5 weeks.
Okay, so
let me ask you a little trivia. So Bruce had a big album at the same time.
Yep, I assume it'd be Born in the USA.
Right. So he had a big hit off that. What was the hit that was right behind this song?
Okay, well, we cheated because you told me about 10 minutes ago.
I'm setting you up for it.
But it was Dancing in the Dark, and you know that was an interesting song, which Patrick and Jim and Sam and I talked about a few weeks ago.
Oh, really?
In that, with that video, he actually literally embraced the female audience. We'll have to go back and listen to that episode. It's on the Rock in the Suburbs website.
I'll definitely listen to it. So that was Prince's that was his first number one single, and it was a top selling single of the year.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, Prince, I knew about him prior to that because I, as I've said many times, I was a pop culture consumer. I mean, I consumed Rolling Stone. I didn't always listen to all the music in there, but I read a lot of articles about bands and artists I didn't know. And Prince was not someone who was being played on the radio in the Midwest at that time.
No.
But after that, when that album came out, he definitely was.
I love this when Rolling Stones ranks songs. They put out that list of the 500 greatest songs. I love these facts, and I always look them up. So Rolling Stone ranks this song, When Doves Cry, number 52 of the 500 greatest songs of all time. I love those facts. I don't know if you do too. It's kind of interesting.
I do. It makes me wonder, what are the top 51? And
what's 51?
And I have no idea. I don't have the list.
Of course you don't.
But yeah. I mean, 53, I'm like, you know, well, what if they'd done a little harder, could they beat When Doves Cry? I mean, how do you measure these things? Anyway.
I love that song.
It's a great movie. It was a multimedia event before we had all forms of multimedia.
Oh, yeah. You had the album. You had the artists.
Music,
you had
videos,
the movie.
On TV,
and then they went on tour.
Yep.
And a little factoid for you, I saw the Purple Rain tour a year after this came out.
That's awesome.
I saw him in concert.
What was that like?
That was absolutely amazing. I was up in the rafters of Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky. He was absolutely phenomenal. He played his whole catalog. And keep in mind that just like a year before, or maybe the same year, I saw the Born USA tour. So that's two examples of artists on the very top of the world at the time that I saw them. Right? This Prince was on top at this time. When I saw Bruce right around the same time for Born USA tour, that album and he were the very top of the music world. Prince was phenomenal. He played everything. You know who opened up for him? Sheila E. opened for him.
Did she play in his band at that time when he took off?
She opened by herself.
Right.
I think maybe she stayed around and played with him too, I think. But it was phenomenal. And I just kind of lucked into it. And now looking back, knowing that Prince is no longer here, I'm so grateful that I got to see him.
Yeah.
You know, I was really young. I really didn't realize the magnitude of what I was seeing at that time. But I love the movie. I love the song. I love the soundtrack. And I love seeing him in concert. So,
you know, I didn't get to see him until a few years after that. But I obviously enjoyed that film and played the soundtrack to death. So,
and we still love it, don't we?
Oh, of course. Now, any other great combinations of music and movies you want to talk about?
Here we go. Hop in. We're going to go. Here we go.
Let's do
Zoom.
It.
We're back to set. We're back to 1977.
Back in time. Wrong movie. Sorry.
Good song, though.
Yep.
We're going back to 77. We're going back to another era. We're going back to the disco era. Disco was big in 77. It was a whole cultural revolution. Everything from clothes to style to music. And there's no argument that there was a lot of music in this movie, Saturday Night Fever.
What can you say? Well, we're going to think about something to say, but you want to hear some music first?
Let's play the biggest hit off of that album by a little band named
The Bee Gees.
The Bee Gees. Here's Stayin' Alive.
Thank you.
brings back some memories of some clothes I probably wouldn't wear anymore. But anyway, good memories, though.
So we're going to get in the movie. We're going to get in the song in a second, but I got a question for you. So disco, you and I were really young around disco. You and I like rock, classic rock, all that good stuff. So where are these songs with you? Because for me, it's kind of like it's a rarity that I put them on. I don't go to disco a lot, but everyone, you go to a party, has a theme, or Halloween, whatever, but that's when I kind of start pulling to it. And I don't listen to stuff in rotation a lot, but I'm curious about a guy like you. Where does this stuff even fit in the universe for you?
You know, it's a memory, really. I mean, at the time this came out, I was DJing high school dances. And so I own this album not only for myself, but to play at dances.
Sure.
I mean, the Bee Gees are, you know, timeless.
They are.
I'm not sure if they're timeless to me in the same way that the Rolling Stones are, but those are great songs. And there's a lot of songs. Not only did the Bee Gees have hits off this album, but other artists had hits off this album.
So this song came out in 77, and so we talked about music and movies, right? So a song that means something within a movie, and just like the song we talked about a few minutes ago, The Power of Love by Huey Lewis, in that opening scene of Back to the Future, this was the first scene, maybe people who are listening might have seen this, I hope so. This was the first scene in Saturday Night Fever, right? Travolta is in his polyester.
Getting dressed in front of the mirror and all that stuff,
yeah,
right?
Looking really slick. He was the guy then, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he walks down the street, right? He's strutting down the street. You can tell by the way I use my walk, I'm a woman's man. And he is going right down the street. He's in his tight pants. He's in a red shirt, I believe, and a black leather jacket. Hair's perfect. And he's carrying a can of paint, because remember, he worked at a paint store, right?
I didn't remember that part, but I'm sure you're right.
You got to trust me. I watched it again this morning. You got to trust me. And that song is going. And that's the opening scene in this movie. So an impactful scene, and a great song, a huge monster movie. I told you I watched a documentary on this movie not long ago. It was a cultural phenomenon. That's a whole other show in itself. But so the producer of Saturday Night Fever reached out to the Bee Gees. They wrote the movie. They're filming it. We need some songs for the movie. And these guys came back, and how many number one hits did they write for this?
I think there's three, and they did other songs on here, too.
They did a few, and they wrote three number one hits. And then the Bee Gees at the time, as we checked a little bit, they had six number one songs in a row, right?
I don't know if it was six. There may have been six from this, combining them and the other artists from the soundtrack. There was four in a row, and they included the song Love Is Thicker Than Water, which was... must have been from an album.
This, right.
It was not on this soundtrack.
But this had...
Casey and the Sunshine Band had a song from this, Boogie Shoes.
I love Casey.
And Yvonne Elliman had a song from this.
Right. So I think the three number ones from this are Stayin' Alive, which we talked about, Night Fever, right?
Yep.
And How Deep Is Your Love, the ballad, right?
Yep.
Those are the three number ones that the Bee Gees wrote for this. So anyway, I think about music, movies. I think those two go together for this movie, right?
Well, and it's interesting how just like... Back to the Future, you had, they set the scene perfectly. It enveloped you. You had a great entry scene, and you had great music that just took you to another place right away. It wasn't like a real quiet, calm opening. Oh, we don't want to scare you too much. We don't want to ruin your,
exactly.
We want to slowly move you into some other experience. These things just went out and grabbed you.
It was very impactful. The movie, the soundtrack, the song, the movie, and the scene, great from the word go. So, monster hit. Monster album, monster song. So that's my three picks. So,
well, it's interesting, you know, that you mentioned John Travolta, you know, because he had other, you know, great moments in movies, and one of them involved music. In Pulp Fiction, there's that scene where he and Uma Thurman dance to Chuck Berry's You Never Can Tell.
What a great
scene.
That's
a good one.
That is.
We did not mention, you know, Wayne's World. Where the guys, opening scene, the guys get in a car and they put in the cassette and headbang to Bohemian Rhapsody. That's a
great.
Pretty good one.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frighten me.
Galileo.
Galileo.
I'd certainly be interested if people who are listening, you know, have any other, you know, moments that they really connected with a movie through some music that they love that got used in a film. You know, for me, the first time I ever really remember music transporting me in a movie was Apocalypse Now.
Epic movie. Epic soundtrack.
That movie, you know, it started with The Doors, The End. And then,
very amazing. Yes. That was a Martin Scorsese thing. Here is like a movie that is just beginning, and they're playing The End.
Right.
Which is a 13-minute Doors classic, right?
Yeah, I mean, and it was, you know, it's one of those things where it really tries to transport the viewer into
and it did.
The mindset from the of scene what it was like
of the battle in, going on and play The Doors End. Yeah.
So, but the scene that I really remember the most out of that, as, you know, at the time I was a teenager, and they brought the Playboy Playmates to the
base. USO dance, right?
They brought them to the
USO dance. Yeah, they did have a dance.
And then they played Suzy Q. Miss Sandra Beatty. Miss May. Miss Terry Terray. Yeah. And the Playmate of the Year. Miss Terry. Whole song, the thing plays out. The dancers dance. They, you know, they interact a little bit with the soldiers.
Yeah,
and then things become a little too crazy.
They got up to the stage. They started rushing the stage. Right. Yep.
Yeah. So they had to throw the smoke bomb and helicopter them out, kind of like
put all the Hanoi back thing, on, you know? the chopper. Yep.
Yeah. You know. So I said Hanoi. I mean a Saigon type thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Exit.
Right.
Quick exit.
Yep.
That really stuck in my mind. For years. I mean, I've loved that movie. I haven't watched it for a couple of years, but I need to watch it again. An interesting fact is I kind of always assumed that was the Creedence Clearwater Revival version of that song. But it was
up to this moment, I always thought it was CCR, but it wasn't?
It was not. It was
On that
particular one, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was a band called Flash Cadillac and the Continental Kids. So I'm going to have to check out Flash. And if any of you don't know that either, you can check them out too. But that also had some other scenes, you know, with music. There's music throughout that. Beach Boys' Surf and Safari was in there. Obviously, the Ride of the Valkyries is there. It doesn't really classify as rock and roll.
Not really.
And then the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction was in there, too. I mean, that was a great scene, too.
And yes. It's kind of like you're in the middle of a war, but kind of they were. And, like, to forget about what's going on just for a few minutes, they're cranking the music and they're skiing behind the boat. It was a pretty cool scene, right?
Yeah, it's that movie is a sight for eyes and ears for sure.
Absolutely,
and it's interesting, you know, that his you know, he passed it on to his daughter in a way. I mean, Sofia Coppola has had many films,
right?
That music is a big part of, like Lost in Translation, the Bill Murray film with Scarlett Johansson has music by bands such as My Bloody Valentine and Jesus and Mary Chain. You know, The Virgin Suicides, Marie Antoinette and Somewhere, and The Bling Ring all have music-rich soundtracks.
And Mike, if I interject for a second, another one that when I was doing my research and thinking about movies of music that is huge, I didn't pull it up because it has such a huge music catalog in it, is Forrest Gump.
You know, I had forgotten about that.
Forrest Gump is, if you look, it's like a double CD. But if you look through there, it's just laden full of tremendous songs.
Oh, yeah, sure. Elvis Presley, Wilson Pickett, Joan Baez, CCR again, Aretha, Bob Dylan, Beach Boys. I mean, that's crazy. Willie Nelson, On the Road Again, Bob Seger.
So I didn't bring that one up, but I did. But, you know, I would have had to select the whole soundtrack for that one. But sure. I remember having that double CD. But, you know, it's funny. I'm so glad you brought up this topic. Music within movies, just in the way that a director or producer can place it within a scene, you can really transport yourself back to watching that movie. right? Like I've already talked about, you know, the first scene in Back to the Future one more time, that music going off and then Staying Alive, fire up that movie, and Prince in When Doves, you know, in Purple Rain, you know, and then this Forrest Gump, all those songs were placed beautifully within that movie. And like you said, of course, Apocalypse Now has all those great scenes of music.
You mentioned a director we haven't had, we could do a week on this guy, Martin Scorsese. You know, he's been great at using rock music in his films, you know, back to 73's Mean Streets. He has an affinity for the Stones, you know.
He does, like, they're New York guys.
And, you know, he did The Shine, he directed The Shine of Light, concert documentary film for the Stones.
He is a big Stones guy.
He used Jumpin' Jack Flash and Mean Streets. He used Gimme Shelter really well in the intro to The Departed as Jack Nicholson speaking.
Through human weakness.
Amen.
Church wants you in your place. Kneel, stand. Kneel, stand. You go for that sort of thing, I don't know what to do for you. Man makes his own way. No one gives it to you. You have to take it. Non serviam.
James Joyce.
Smart, Colin. Guineas from the North End down Providence try to tell me what to do. And something maybe happened to me.
So that I want to watch that film now too. You know, other films by Scorsese, such as Casino, has Stone songs, and so does Goodfellas. And Goodfellas also has music from the 50s and 60s, you know, including, and it has Layla by Derek and the Dominoes, obviously Eric Clapton. He's directed The Last Waltz. He did George Harrison documentary. And currently he is doing, you know, his latest work is the Rolling Thunder Review, a Bob Dylan story that's on Netflix, in case you want to catch that.
I think it's safe to say Scorsese liked music quite a bit. The Stones in particular, but he liked music.
Yeah, and you know, it just he just seems to find a way to pick the right song for whatever's going on. And it just really, you know, we have popcorn here, but when you're at the theater, you know, you sit there and you have popcorn, you paid your money, and you're transporting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always great when a director allows a musician or an artist to help transport you into his or her work.
Absolutely, and that's what I think these great directors and soundtracks have done. Each of these things you mentioned, they have married up music and movies, their movie with someone else's music, and it's movie magic. Transport you using that music in that movie. So I love it. I mean, it's just fantastic.
Well, we want to thank you for listening. And again, don't worry, Jim and Patrick are coming back.
You're
not going to have to live with us forever.
This is our last show for a while.
I guess so. I mean, you know, I guess the audience can only take us in small bits.
That's for sure.
But if you have comments about music and movies, or you want us to do other things, you can always send your comments to rock@suburbspod.com.
Write nice notes about us. We can come back and do more shows.
Exactly. Or you can send them on Twitter to @suburbspod.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can send them directly to me at Mike Snyder, S-N-I-D-E-R. And then also Rockin' the Suburbs is active on Facebook and on Instagram.
Very active.
And if you just want to use your old-time telephone or your smartphone, you can leave a message on the Suburban Party line at 612-440-1984. And thanks again. And we're going to leave you with some walk-in music.
So for Rock in the Suburbs, this is Brett Hunter.
And this is Mike Snyder.
We play music, keep listening, and keep rocking.
I wanna put on
could talk about Bruce all day, but this isn't about Bruce.